on, but we now have...
Sweetie, what movie is that from? I'm not going to freak out on everybody.
Jerry Maguire.
Very good.
But like Aaron, who's on Team Zen, wrote a letter for me, so I didn't have to write it. Sean is talking to the hotel, so I don't have to do that. Like a lot of the things that are kind of intense at the end. And most of the stuff, like we ordered everything a long time ago. It kind of has a natural rhythm.
Yeah.
And also crap's going to go wrong and there's not a lot. You just have to kind of roll with it and no one's going to even know that's happening. Maybe they will, but they won't.
The Team Zen members. Hey, by the way, Team Zen, if I forget, and I won't, but if I do, make sure that we put that like VIP tape in the
just
first
make a note and I'll
rows.
Put it on the list. So Team Zen gets VIP seats.
VIP tape for the middle section of the first two rows.
And they are also joining us for lunch. Mm-hmm. Do we have something with Debbie Reber too? Like, I feel like we have a lot of...
Oh, yeah. I don't know where we are with Debbie, but she wants to sit down with anybody who wants to. And I think that's going to be either at lunch on Saturday, but I'm kind of hoping it's Friday night.
Yeah. So basically Debbie Reber, who wrote Differently Wired, she knows we have a micro community and she wants to be there for you guys if you have questions. And for that matter, you don't have to have a kid who's differently wired. Debbie, her book is about all kids and allowing our kids to be who they are. It's not about kids who have diagnoses, even though she has a specialty there.
Her book is universal.
Absolutely.
And the reason I know is because Kathy read it for like 20 minutes and you said to me, this book is really good.
Because I used it in my college class with my college students and I didn't even focus on autism.
We usually get like all these books get sent to us and I feel like I'm such a like humble bragger here, but I don't have time to read these books. I don't got time to read the books I want to read. But this one for some reason stuck out. And I think it's because she was coming from Denmark.
She was coming from
Germany,
Amsterdam,
one of the European things.
Amsterdam.
Anyways. So my name's Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio.
Are you recording?
Okay. Yes, I am recording. Helen can read the books for us. Hey
Thank
man,
you,
you
yes.
want it. You got it. All right. So this is Zen Talk number 76. And we're going to unmute Millie Shee. Hi, Millie.
Hey, guys.
What's up?
Okay, well, I've got another question because all three of my kids are challenging me. And last time was about Emma. This time is about Oliver, whom I have asked you guys about before. So if you guys remember, he's one of the twin boys, mm-hmm. 7, turning 8 next month. And he's the one that has been overly sensitive to criticism. He would... be really aggressive with his brother, particularly. Anyway, basically everything has escalated with him. So he's the one that you suggested maybe we try, mentioning how he's similar to a tiger, how, if you remember that time. Yeah,
I do.
And I would try to find quiet time with him to just get that message across, because usually when he's, you know, his lid is flipped, that nothing is getting through. So things have really escalated with him where, he's gotten so violent physically that, with hitting and punching and kicking and besides verbally, right. That's a given, but I sometimes have to lay on top of him gently.
Yep. Restrain.
Okay, I'm going to hold you. I'm going to hold you until, you've calmed down a little bit so that you don't hurt yourself or any of us and blah, blah. Okay. So, and so then the other things that we've learned recently, because we had him join a group at school. They have a school counselor and there are certain kids that the teachers recommend that maybe meet with the counselor once a week. And so he was part of a small group of kids that could use some help with self-confidence. So that was one of the things that I've come to you guys about. He has no confidence in himself. He thinks, he literally says, I'm bad mm-hmm. about almost anything, even things that he is visibly good at. So in this session, which is several weeks long, it could have been 6 weeks or something. What the counselor does is each time she would ask them each to say a self-affirmation, like, I am good at soccer. I am good at jokes or whatever it is, up to each of the kids, but you could also pass. He passed every single time. And the counselor told us that usually Even with the kids that pass, there's always a kid that would pass. By the end of the session, the 8-week or 6-week long session, they would say something. Mm-hmm. Never once did he say anything. Mm-hmm. So then when he had even individual, just like one-on-one with her a couple of times, nothing came out. I think just to back up that, out of all that, I'm realizing that we think a lot of this behavior might be due to anxiety. Mm-hmm. And him wanting to be a perfectionist. Mm. And if what he does is not perfect, he's not going to do it. Mm-hmm. He is really good at basketball. And despite the fact that he could beat his friends at playing whatever the game is, knockout, horse, whatever, and he's joined a Parks and Rec basketball team, he will play in practice with his team, but has refused so far, 6 to 7 games, has refused to play actually in the game. Because I think he is actually terrified that he's going to not do well or something, which, and then that goes back to him never being able to be okay with him losing. When he plays any kind of game, board game, whatever game, shooting, basketball, whatever, if he has been even winning for a time and he loses just once, that's it. Mm-hmm. So this is all a bunch of things. So we're finding that, one, we think he has this, he needs to be perfect, mm-hmm, in his mind. And so that also ties into him still wedding, you know, having accidents, mm-hmm, because he cannot do that right. Mm-hmm. And so he thinks he's bad, right? Mm-hmm. So it all makes sense now. The perfectionist mindset, and then which leads to anxiety, right? I mean, again, I don't want to label it as that, but I'm thinking that that might be it. Mm-hmm. And that could even be related to my Reiki friend even said that when in anxiety, our sympathetic nervous system is hyperactivated. And so it's fight, flight, or freeze. And then losing bladder control, one of our organs, is expected. Like that could totally be related. Mm-hmm. So what I want to help him with is to feel rooted, you know, because it's his first chakra that is potentially at play here too, that he doesn't feel safe and secure and all this. Mm-hmm. But even trying to help him say ground, you know, just like be a tree and all this, he hasn't, like, I don't care. It's stupid. And he basically, I can't get through to him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I'm at the point where I think even professional help, I don't know if we could even bring him to someone professional, because he will clam up. Mm-hmm. And that would just make him more anxious. I would go to seek help for my husband and me, right? For us to help him, to support him, because mm-hmm, I don't know how else to help him at this point. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm bringing this to you just in case you had any suggestions, because so now there's this other level of him being a perfectionist and maybe anxiety. That's the root of this behavior that he's exhibiting.
Mm. Yeah. I think that you're right on target. Did you, no, sometimes you like to go first. Okay. So I like all your thinking. I love when you start to put pieces together, when we all do, not just you, Millie, but like when we start to see, okay, this connects to this, and you're right. Any kind of bathroom issues is all about control and feeling out of control. Like that's what it always goes back to. It doesn't mean that it's simple just to solve it. It just means that in the end, that's always what it's connected to. And so it really has mm-hmm. a high degree of correlation to anxiety, for sure. So you're right on target. Mm-hmm. I like your thought about you and your husband having somebody to talk to about it, not because I think this is like a horrible thing and this is awful and it's not going to solve, because it will, but because it'll remind you of the taking care of yourself in the process, riding the wave of this development for him. And also while he's going through this and riding this wave, because there's, is he 10?
He's going to be 8.
He's going to be 8. He's going to be 8. Okay. So he is in third or fourth?
Second.
Okay. So he is like, as his brain is growing, and especially going into third grade, because that's why a lot of things happen. And, you know, as kids go into third grade, when a lot of responsibility ramps up, mm-hmm. which he already knows about probably. Yeah, I know, yeah. Right? But it's okay because he's doing a lot of that work now. I don't want you to feel like, oh no, it's going to necessarily get worse, because that's not always true. Sometimes it's interesting the way our kids, when things aren't as hard, they can fall apart a little more. And then when things really do ramp up, that they've already built that muscle. Do you see what I mean? So it's not always correlated with things get harder and they get more difficult. It's not always like that. But this is what I was going to say. So I love the fact that you would get support to make sure that you're taking care of yourself. But the other piece is, I say just go right in with it, with him. I know conversations about this are not easy and he may clamp up and not talk about it, but I would go into what perfectionism is, and not like as a clinical way, but like, does it feel scary to disappoint? Who do you think you'll be if you don't win this game? Without the intention of trying to convince him to do anything. You're not having these conversations with him because you're trying to get him to do something. You're starting to talk about what is very apparent to you, which is he doesn't feel he would be of value if he somehow failed or disappointed himself or others. He thinks that his sense of value is then gone and diminished. And you are going to go right to the core of that. We're not going to beat around the bush at the top, which is like, what do you think you're good at? That's top stuff. It's all this underneath. And it's not going to be one conversation. This may be things that you bring up over 6 months of a period of time where he starts to get used to hearing it and get used to hearing that, the conversation. And again, even like, you know, Millie, for you, because I know you like, you know, tangible things. What can I read? What can I look at? Go back to Brené Brown's book called The Gifts of Imperfection and read about perfectionism. And read about, and you may have already pulled this up. Yeah, but go back and get that sense of what perfectionism is. The greatest fear is rejection. The greatest fear is I won't be who I am anymore. Like, I'll literally lose my sense of self. As adults, we have an understanding that even though we feel that way, it's not necessarily true. An 8-year-old doesn't know that. So he's just kind of swimming in the fear of it. And if you can go to it, like, just go straight to the fear. And and he may say, okay, enough. And then you stop. Like, it's not about, I'm going to overwhelm you. But I find that as parents, we try and do all this stuff around it instead of talking about it.
So what about, obviously Oliver has some issues with perfectionism.
Correct.
And I like your advice, sweetie, is going right at it.
Yes. Talking about insecurity and talking about that you won't be valued if something happens.
A few questions. Yeah. And I guess these are actually more directed towards Kathy to help Millie.
Yes.
What about also conveying that his need to be really good at things is a strength?
Yes.
Like, you know, make sure that that is something.
Yeah.
The fact that I don't want him to feel guilty, but if Millie and what's your husband's name, Millie?
Tim.
Millie and Tim decide to get some support. Is that something that can be conveyed to Oliver to kind of role model so that when Oliver is ready to step into a therapeutic situation? And what I was going to say is there's all these different types of therapy. There's art therapy, there's music therapy. Like, there's all these different types. It's not just sitting with a grown-up talking about your problem. So,
well, and absolutely. I mean, obviously, and I think this goes without saying, talking about, you know, if Millie and Tim went to talk to somebody about how can we support our son, it's not you wouldn't say to him, we're going to support to therapy to learn how to support you.
No, mom and dad are going to get help to help themselves.
And Millie, can you personally relate to perfectionism?
Why I made my face earlier when you mentioned Brené Brown's book. Tim literally just finished reading it because he has things that he's dealing with in that realm. Not so much perfectionism, but just expectations he has of himself.
Yes.
And me, that's been my middle name all my life.
Yes.
I'm a perfectionist.
Yes.
And in fact, my Reiki master friend, who said, you and Tim need to show him, model it for him, that you guys can mess up, but you're still fine. And, you know, and you're not perfect and all this. So
let me say,
I look for those opportunities.
This is to start a conversation with him. Next time this comes up, or maybe when he's just kind of in a low key place, or maybe when he's really feeling agitation, say, Oliver, something you have taught me through your experience is so much more about myself and that I feel when you are anxious, I know that feeling. And start to use those words, anxious, you know, fearful, disappointed. We don't need to
normalize it.
Yeah. Feeling anxious is not a clinical diagnosis. We all feel anxious.
Yeah.
It's a feeling. Sometimes we don't use the words depression and anxiety because then we think I'm a depressed person or I'm, we all have depression at times and we all deal with anxiety and we all deal with perfectionism, but you may feel it at a very acute, you know, like you, and again, because you have all these tools and capabilities, you've been able to kind of manage it, and he's feeling it on the most core level, which you can tell him, I'm learning through you and I am learning more about myself by watching the challenges that I know that you're dealing with. And you can even say, does it sometimes feel like this? Does it sometimes feel like this? And he may initially, Millie, say, no, no. He may not want to be related to because he may be still hiding it. Mm-hmm. But the more to, you know, when your Reiki master said to you, you know, show him that you are dealing with it too. Don't demonstrate all the tools you're using and how powerful you are. Demonstrate the vulnerability of it. Because a lot of times as parents, we want to show up and show them, see how I've managed through it, but they don't see the vulnerable part. They just see the tools. And you, and again, even in parenting, there's a line to that. It's not about I'm falling apart. It's I'm learning more about myself by you. And I want you to know you're not alone in this. This is not about Oliver. This is also about Millie and Tim. And he's, and this is what I've always found with my girls. And this has just been happening this year. They, you know, when we talk about our, you know, the conscious parent, our kids are teaching us, they are healing us, Millie. He's showing up and showing you a part of yourself and he's demonstrating it in real time. But this process is going to also heal a part of you or make it more conscious. And it's not your fault. It's not a blame thing. It's all, we're all reflecting each other.
It's an invitation. So
exactly.
So yeah, you know, Millie, we go way back. We know each other quite well. And you do so many wonderful things as the mother of these three children.
Yeah. And, you're so involved
and
engaged.
And, but you, not but, and you are, you like the podcast and you go to conferences, you go to retreats, you go to Reiki. And I feel like there's, you know, that you want everything to work out really well. And you're even owning this. You're like, yes, I totally have perfectionist things. So I because I know you well enough, I love the fact that you're willing to go work on yourself. Most parents come to us saying, how do I fix my kid? Right. And I know you're willing to step through the discomfort of figuring out how Oliver is showing you something in yourself that you can heal through. And Kathy's right. You got to be like, nuanced and how you communicate that to Oliver, but have gratitude. Like, I'm so glad that you're
showing me,
you're
part
showing
of me.
Me parts of that I struggle with. So, and I don't know, I know that you're going to do whatever it takes to heal yourself and to help your family. So I guess I'm just grateful. That's all.
And I will share because my girls have all dealt with anxiety at different times. And but one of my daughters deals with it more similar to me. And so when she struggles, I feel the terror of my own anxiety because she is experiencing anxiety and I want to fix it. And I want to tell her all the things and tell her all the things. And what I have learned is exactly what you're about to do, which is I go into my therapist's office and I do EMDR and that is my in, is all I have to do is think about my daughter feeling anxious. And then all of a sudden it's all this stuff. It's not mine. I'm not making her feel anxious. It's not that. It's that I get some resolution where I'm like, wow, I feel those things that she feels too. And then when I'm with her, it's less about you need to change, get better. And it's more about this is the human condition. It's like we become more like this. And they can hear us better because we're not saying be better. We're saying, I understand you. And you are saying the words, I understand you. But when you're actually working on it too, they feel it. I don't care if they're 3, 4, 5, 8, 10, 12, like they're like, oh, I'm okay. Because he's, even when he's anxious, I said to my daughter the other day, because she has, you know, days where she's really up and then days where she's not. And she was like, I had a really good day yesterday, didn't I? And I said, you know, even when you're having a really tough day, I love you exactly the same amount. Like, it's not a, okay, today was good, now we're on good terms. Like,
yeah, it's not, your value is not predicated on how you show up in this household. So I want to hear from Millie. Thoughts, comments, whatever.
Yeah. And Yeah, thank you. I should clarify that when I mentioned getting support for Tim and me, I mean, I should be seeing a therapist no matter what, but whether, you know, this issue with Oliver is happening or not, but we have access to a group here that can either work directly with the kids or with the parents that deals with whether it's anxiety or some sort of issues, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I wonder if it's time to kind of go to them, because we literally just talked to a friend the other day whose daughter, again, dealing with anxiety and behavior at home and all this, and they've taken her to this service. So I don't know, but so that is a little bit different than going to just talk therapy for us. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I would be happy to do as well. But I wonder if it is also time to go see someone professional to deal with specifically issues and anxiety in a 7-8 year old, so that parents can learn strategies on how to deal with it. But I hear what you're saying. And the other thought I had too was, because he has a twin brother who is 2 minutes apart from him, I think, and I've said this before, you know, here, is that I think he compares himself to this brother and to Aaron. And because Aaron can relatively manage his emotions a little bit better and speak and tell us how he feels, I think he then feels this competition with his brother. And so even this morning, waking up in the morning, because Aaron got up before the light came on that said you can get up, he was a mess, because Aaron got out there before he did, because he wasn't first. Mm-hmm. So you know what I mean? So he has a direct this competition. And so, like, one idea I had, I don't know how I can make this happen with just me, is coming home from school, I would like to have some downtime with him, with Oliver, just himself, to just let him chill. I can talk to him and just kind of one-on-one time just with him without Aaron. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Just to let him decompress with me only.
How often?
Because I think he comes back here and then.
How often does he get that time one-on-one with you, Millie?
Not often. I mean, I have to make the time so that the other two are taken care of, so that I can go out with him and go do something. It is not often. I mean, that's not true. I mean, I suppose I could make it happen daily, where I just take him out to the backyard and be on the trampoline, or, you know, do something. I could manage it somehow, I think. It's just that, you know, the other ones potentially could need me at the same time. And so I just have to figure out some sort of way. What, maybe I just tell everyone else, you know, I'm like, I'm having my, you know, alone time with Olive right now, and I'll have my time with you later. It's just that then I have to figure out my day to make that all happen and still, you know, manage the household and make dinner and, you know, all that, right? So it's just logistics, but I'm sure I could figure it out. I feel like,
yeah, you're smart enough.
Yeah, I just feel like alone time.
You're smart enough to be able to figure that out. And I don't know, whose quote is it? Like, which kid do you love the most? The one that needs me, you know, right now. And right now, Oliver is that guy. And Millie, you are that person too, because this is an invitation for you to work through some of your own perfection. So I feel like, I mean, it might be at the expense of time with your daughter and with Aaron. And, you know, the pendulum will keep swinging back and forth.
Well, and also, can we, like, and again, everyone's going to go, and they're going to be shocked by this comment that I'm going to say. Can you take him out of school one day? Can you do something out of the box? Mm-hmm. Like, we're trying to fit all these, like, new ideas into this existing box of the way things have to be. And what if, like, you picked him up an hour early from school, or he missed an hour in the morning? And again, if that is creating more anxiety for him, it's not the right way. I'm just trying to, like, demonstrate that there's breathing room. What we try and do is say, like, because you at the end were like, I have to do this and I have to do this, and I'm trying to fit all these things in. Sometimes something else has to give, and we have to, like, because when there is crisis, we're willing to do anything, right? Like, when we're in crisis, you know, we're like, I don't care about school. I don't care about homework. I only care about this. So why do we push ourselves to that point
before we do anything?
Why don't we do something out of the box before the crisis? Because this is, and then what do we learn in crisis? That we need more self-care, that we need more, that our kids need more downtime, that our kids need more conversation about their emotions. And you guys on here are all doing this, but it's like, we're like, I'm going to work the system, stay in the box. And then when it implodes, then we're willing. But it's like, why not before the implosion?
Break the box earlier.
Break the box earlier. And Millie, to your question about maybe we should try this instead, you do whatever feels right to you. There is no right path. And this is, you know, and I'm saying this to make sure you understand that you may feel more comfortable doing this group first. And then you may say, okay, I just want to go for me. And then maybe you and Tim, but there is no like A, B, C. Like if you feel like right now the physical safety of him and everybody else is the most important, then get the strategies. You know, you got to like, I don't want you feeling like, oh, I'm grasping at straws. Like do the thing that you feel most adamant about. And then I will challenge you after that, do the thing that terrifies you the most, because that's where all the light is. That the cave that
the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek.
And that's like what therapy is not just a going in. We need a different word than therapy. Talking to someone professionally or whatever it may be, support. It could even be your Reiki person. Talking about the things that feel so much terrifying is where all the light comes in. And I don't mean we're healed. I mean, the new ideas, the creative way of thinking, seeing things differently. A miracle is just seeing things differently.
All right. So
thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Millie.
Yeah. You're not alone. I mean, anxiety. That's just, that's the thing, man.
Yeah,
you're not alone.
Exactly. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to mute Millie. We're going to get to Helen in a second. First, I want to say hi to the people that jumped on later. Mary Jo, Alicia, Nikki, I think Caroline, Amy, and Alyssa. Amy wrote something in the chat. You mentioned on a recent podcast that Kathy did a workshop on raising a confident daughter. Can you give us some of those tools here today?
Sure. But do you want to answer questions? And I can do that in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah. Or you can maybe just post it on Facebook if we have more questions in time.
Here's the thing. I get a lot of emails and things on the Facebook page about, you know, doing a video. Actually, the last talk I just did was videotaped. So but that's very rare.
That wasn't the raising the company.
I know that was a different one, but, is that you guys know how I talk. I go up and I have a slide that says a word and then I just talk. So I don't have like, I'm not a bullet point gal. Like I don't have, here's the strategies because I don't believe in that. Like that's not the reality of life. Like it's more fluid. And I don't like to say to people, do this, this, and this. So really what I talk about, like in the Raising Confident Daughters, like I'll just give you my first slide and then we'll go over the few things at the end.
But sweetie, I like bullet points.
I know.
I like resources. I like videos. I like handouts.
I know.
And I like those things.
I know. And I'm not saying there's nothing we can do. I'm not saying everything is in the ethers. I mean, I try and be a little more like, I guess my point is my first slide was your child is not going to be confident all the time.
I'm going to bring Amy in.
Nor should they be.
Amy, why'd you ask that question? Oh, she just muted herself. She might not be in a place where she can talk.
She may not want to, yeah. She may just want, she is. Hi, Amy.
Here I am. Hi, I am in a public place, so I'm not sure if you're able to hear me very well.
I can.
I have two daughters, 7 and 8. The 8-year-old has been told that she needs some help around confidence from a teacher. And so while I believe she's incredibly confident, I think there's areas of her life where maybe she's not bringing that. And I just want to know how to support her. And I think that if I just have maybe a couple of little tools, we could incorporate that in our day-to-day life.
I'll say one thing to that. And again, I'm a teacher and I'm not trying to dump on the teacher because she's trying to help or he's trying to help. But saying that to a child is not super helpful. Saying you need to work on your confidence, that doesn't help. It makes them feel a little more like something else they have to do and that they're not.
Confidence just happens. You don't take a direction to become more confident.
Right. And it's okay for you to say, we honor this teacher and we respect this teacher. And at the same time, maybe that comment wasn't helpful. It's okay to demonstrate human behavior and that sometimes and again, I don't know how she said it, but the reason why I say that is what we have to tell our kids is confidence is already something they have. It lives inside of them. It's when they decide to bring it out and which situations do they want to bring it out in? You see what I mean? Because, you know, our kid could have confidence to do a beer bong, but that's not a great decision.
I'm very good at beer bongs.
I know. So my point is that confidence is not something you want on high alert all the time. It's when do you want to bring it out? Because she doesn't need to go get it. She doesn't need to find it. It's not in a book. She already has it. So when teachers or therapists say to kids, you need to get more confidence, where am I going to get that? Mm-hmm. It comes from decisions that they make on an everyday basis.
And practice and experiences.
Exactly. And like, you know, making decisions that are hard and failures. And I always really differentiate between, as you know, the words bravery and courageous, because courageous is really like living from your heart, doing, being who you are, speaking what you need, speaking your truth. It's courageous to be who you are. Bravery can be more like an act, you know, like I'm gonna, they're two different things, but they're both valuable and they both demonstrate confidence. And letting her know that through her lifetime, confidence is a practice, a moment-to-moment practice. And sometimes she's going to drop the ball, meaning she's not going to say. I'm talking a lot to my 17-year-old, almost 17-year-old, about this, because she on the Enneagram is a 9, which is a peacekeeper. And she sometimes wants to make sure everybody's happy.
She makes herself small.
And she will, sometimes. Like she was telling me about, she goes, Mom, it drives me crazy. She's like, I was doing a report with this person and I put this quote in. And then he showed up and put a quote, the exact same quote, and I went in and deleted mine so I wouldn't make him feel bad about putting his in. And I'm not like, oh, you're not confident enough. I'm like, well, you know, tell me why. And she's like, we're partners and I didn't want them to feel bad about it. And I didn't want him to feel dumb. And it's just, that's her personality. So then my response to her is that's not a bad thing to do, but can you demonstrate who you are in a way that won't make him feel small, saying, hey, I had that idea too. Which one should we keep? And I'm helping her, supporting her, not really helping her. She's got to do it herself in finding, honoring who she is as a 9 and as a peacekeeper, but also knowing it's okay to speak who she is. That's confidence.
Can I ask a few questions? Mm-hmm. I'm going to unmute you, Amy. Hopefully you're okay with that. How old is your daughter?
She's 8 now. It was actually something that was said to her back in kindergarten when she was about 6, around her willingness to read in a small group. And so it's something that I've constantly been trying to figure out, like, how to help her with this when she gets in situations where maybe she's just a little bit nervous or doesn't quite have the expertise around something yet, like reading. To be able to, you know, just go forward and jump in and be courageous. And so it's something that I figured, hey, we're always dealing with this. If I just could figure out, you know, how to support her in this area, maybe that would be helpful for her.
Okay. If I was to get that moment back, and again, it's not, the teachers do, I've probably said that to kids unknowingly. So I'm not trying to blame the teacher, but if I could get that moment back, it would be, it's your turn to read. And if she didn't feel like it, saying, okay, you know, I trust you. I know that you'll choose your time when it's right. And I just want you to know that I've been watching you read and you're a fantastic reader. And then walking away and allowing her to, again, intrinsic motivation where she gets to decide. Because sometimes when we're working with children, we try and force them to decide. You need to read now. If you're not reading now, you're not confident. Bullshit.
I have a resource. Jessica Leahy wrote a book called The Gifts of Failure.
Yeah. Ooh, that's good for Millie too. Millie, you'll like that book too.
I saw her speak one time. Her message is unbelievable. Like, it's such a foundational idea. And the idea is that there really is no failure. And the way that, you know, one of my goals as a parent is to try my best to have my kids be intrinsically motivated. And the way that they do that is to have, it's the opposite of perfection. Can you know that no matter what happens, there's an opportunity to learn? So if you pee in your pants, like, oh, okay, what can we learn from that?
Or my kids have done that at school.
Or if you do a bad job of reading in front of the class, like, okay, well, can we work on that? But anyways, Jessica does, it's a really easy read and really impactful read. So if I were going to recommend any parenting books, aside from Kathy's 3, The Gift of Failure is probably in my top 5. Conscious Parent with Shefali. Gift of Failure is in there. What else is in there for parenting specific
books? Parenting from the Inside Out by Dan Siegel.
Yeah, those three.
The Whole Brain Child. So, and another thing, like, talking, Todd just, you know, we're confidence comes from these places where you do make these mistakes and you realize that when you make the mistakes, the world doesn't fall apart. You know, that's how you learn the world doesn't fall apart. And what I enjoy doing with the girls now is because they've all like missed going to the bathroom at school. Like it, some of it was, I remember in first grade, it happened to JC a bunch because she was wearing tights and couldn't get them down. And like, and Cameron one time couldn't find the bathroom in high school. Yeah. She would like kill me, but she, and then, you know, it's happened.
It's not like we're recording this.
I know. Fine. But my point is that we now laugh about these things when we're talking about them. We don't say, ooh, we don't talk about that. We'll be like, when was that, that happened when you peed your pants at school? And then we all laugh about it because we've come out of it.
And we got to model.
We got to how we fail. Tuck his pants occasionally just to show.
We got to model how we fail in front of our kids. Like I'm bad at this. I'm not good at sharing my failures in my day-to-day life with my daughters.
Authentically. You try and share like things that really don't bother you.
Right. But the ones that really I care about, it's, I there's too much energy in that. So that's something I'm trying to like shift right now. Like if I had a, like this morning we're at Panera and I kind of like said something not nice, like, oh, I was complaining about my day and they like, are like, oh, I guess dad's going to have a bad day or something like that. I'm like, I'm just complaining. I'm just kind of showing my human side of it. Like I get annoyed and overwhelmed just like everybody, but they didn't like it. It makes them uncomfortable when I
think I didn't feel that at all.
Well, it may not make them feel uncomfortable. They don't like when I complain. Let's put it that way.
Right.
But who does, right?
Right. Well, and that's always the thing is with kids, they need us to be a stable foundation in the best way we can be. So when we do talk about our issues, we say, but I got it.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm doing to work on it. But we're sidetracking from the confidence thing. I would just say that confidence, as we all know, is born of failure. And so when we don't fail, we don't learn how to be confident. And failure, I'm using the Jessica Leahy definition, which is failure just means things didn't work out the way you wanted them to or the way that you expected them to. And then how can we look at that, feel the energy of the discomfort and move through it with some humor and some lightness? Like, you know, we have so many jokes from my children growing up where things happen in the classroom. Like, so there's this presentation that Cameron gave that we post on our page all the time, our family page. I don't post it publicly, but she did this report on France. And first of all, it's really good. It's not like it was a failure, but there's so many mistakes in it. Like she spelled things wrong and, you know, and we just post it all the time and have like good laughs about it and hug that little second grader internally. Like nothing, everything is okay.
Well, one other resource, Michael Jordan has a commercial about how took all the last second shots and how he failed, you know, he missed 82 last second shots in his career. And then it's like 30 seconds or 60 seconds. And he's like, and that is why I succeed because so it's nice. And I know Michael Jordan, most kids did not have a chance to see him because he's so old now, but I'm sure they know who MJ is.
That's
so.
Where everything's born from is all of that. And I was going to say something else.
Somebody can find that YouTube clip, just post it in the chat. Just put Michael Jordan Nike commercial Millie's on it. So Helen has been ultra patient.
Okay.
So we're going to move over to her. And Amy, thank you for, thanks for jumping in. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Helen. I can't hear you.
I can't hear you. Hold on, Helen.
I think your mic is a little off. She's working on the technology. Now you muted yourself. Now you didn't.
Oh, Millie posted the failure commercial.
Nice, Millie.
She'll figure it out.
Helen's having some difficult time. So this is what we like to call in the Zen Talk world downtime.
Well, I wanted to think of what I was going to say to Amy because it was a good thing.
I'm going
to
churn the butter while we have downtime, sweetie.
What's churn the butter got to do with downtime?
I'm just entertaining everybody. See?
Oh, I don't know.
See? Some people are laughing.
I know, but I was good.
Helen hung up on herself.
She's rebooting.
So she's a failure.
Exactly.
And she's showing us how she's learning.
You know, I'm going to go back to I'm going to blend together Millie's question and Amy's question. It's that once something really bad happens, and I'll finish this, Helen, and then we're going to go to you. we are like, when we have crisis, we're like, I don't care anymore. I don't care what people think of me. I don't care what blah, blah, blah. I don't care. And we lose all that like fear about failure because we're dealing with the crisis at hand. And my question always is for us and our kids, you know, I talk to my girls about this all the time. Let's lose that fear now. Let's not worry about what people think about us. Let's not worry. Let's do what we need to do and let the chips fall where they may and not have to get us pushed to a place where then we have to learn it through negative experience. Anyway, I don't know if that translated well, but it's like we can do it in real time. We don't have to wait until we're hanging by a thread. All right, Helen.
Are you there, Helen? No, still can't hear you.
Can't hear you.
You're unmuted. I think the problem is on your end, unfortunately. So you could either type it in, which sucks because I hate typing stuff, or we can just save it for Facebook or whatever. One thing I was going to mention about, whether it's Millie or Amy or any of us that are challenged, the invitation is always like, what do I have to learn from this? Like Millie's son has some perfectionist issues. Millie is identifying that she has some of those same issues. I don't know Amy barely at all, but I'm guessing that there's probably parts of her life that like there's parts of my life where I'm not that confident. Correct. So it's like, it just kind of takes a little bit of the air out of the balloon because as parents, we're just so focused on making sure our kid doesn't suffer or making sure
or thinking there's something's wrong with them
or something's wrong with them or making sure they're happy. And you can still put some attention over there, but put some attention on yourself. Like, okay, what lesson is to be learned for me in this situation?
Yeah.
You know,
they are sometimes our most sensitive kids are the ones identifying the bigger issues and maybe not just in our family, but of the world. And can we give them credit for that rather than making them the problem? Yeah. You know?
So Helen's mic sucks. So we're going to have to table that question. So we have an open 15 minutes for anybody who wants to share anything. And I know we're all, if you're here, except for the pog is the aunt, the best aunt ever.
Yes.
But everybody else has kids. So I'm guessing everybody's challenged in one way, shape, or form. So we have 15 minutes. So let's use them. Who's got something? Put it in the chat box or raise your hand or do something so I know what's going on. And I'll just embrace the silence. I love silence. It's my favorite. Oh, Kim. There we go. Good old Kim. Hi, Kim.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
So it's really not a question. It's more of a how do you guys handle this? So we have similar ages as you guys. My oldest daughter's going to be 17 soon. My youngest one's 15. And you know, my husband's very involved day to day. He spends time with each of them. But there are things I'm probably more sexually or how they're feeling about other things that he just doesn't really want to know the details of. And it's not like we hide it from him. And sometimes something will come up and I'll be like, okay, well, how much do you want to know? And he's like, probably not. But at the same time, I don't feel like my girls are hiding it from him. Like they'll speak openly about whatever, whoever seems to be in the room or not in the room. And he just doesn't comment or make freak out or clarify. But I also feel like, should we be talking about it without them knowing about it? And should we not be? Like, I don't know.
Mm. Wow. Question. That is such a good question.
If there was an issue, a serious issue, I wouldn't like keep it from him by any means, but just general, like all the stuff your daughters talk to you about, Kathy, you then go share their what happened or, you know, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
It's a good question. So before you answer that, one is I kind of feel I can identify with where Chuck is coming from. I'm not positive how sexually active any of my daughters are. But I remember I was with a customer one time, this is years ago, and he talked to me about, he was a single dad, and he's like, yeah, my 16-year-old needed to go on the birth control pill, so I went to the clinic with her. I'm like, holy shit, that's just so weird as a dad to do that. But I feel like...
So uncommon, not weird.
So uncommon. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Got to use the right words, right, sweetie? so uncommon for a dad to be so, like, that's just a weird thing to think about, our daughters being sexually active. And I don't know what it's like for sons because I don't have any sons. And I think it's easier for daughters to talk to their moms. But when our daughters become, not if, but when our daughters become sexually active, I think I'm going to want to know everything, but I don't know.
Well, and it's like, I think there's two things. Number one, honestly, there's things in my daughter's life that I don't need to know either. There's things that, and I don't say don't tell me. It's not like that, but there's certain things that I'm really trying to give them their own life where I'm not involved in it, because they don't need me, especially the 17 and the 15-year-old. They need me as a support system and as someone who will help them when they need it, but I also don't need all the details. When they do share the details, which I'm happy to hear, and I have the foundation to hear, it depends on what it is. Like, yeah. I know that my daughter was interested in somebody that at work, and she mentioned it really low key. And so I told Todd, and Todd brought it up with her, and then it was a conversation. But I don't think we need, like, if, you know, I think answering your question, like, if your daughters were talking to you about something in their lives, like, and again, it's sexuality versus sex. Like, if it's intimacy with another person and they're talking to you about it, there's really no need for Chuck to be involved unless they're struggling in some way. Sexuality, meaning if it's about their periods or if it's about tampons and pads and healthcare. Yeah, because that's healthcare, you know, but their actual intimate birth control, if, you know, but their actual intimate experiences with other people, I don't even need to know that.
What if one of Kim's daughters shares something like, I went to bed with my boyfriend last mm-hmm, night mm-hmm. and I was scared, but it wasn't as bad as I thought. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad. Does Kim, and you know, this is hypothetical, does Kim share that with Chuck, or does Kim ask her daughter, can I share this with your dad?
Well, I'm assuming, Kim, that your daughters probably already know that you guys share most things. Like, because my girls, they've yeah. never said, well, I don't know. I think that it depends on whether or not you need to share it. Meaning, if your daughter's told you something and it feels too heavy, or you need Chuck to talk it through, then absolutely bring him in. But just like any other human being, sometimes my girls and I talk about things just as human beings, and it's not a something that I need. It's not a parenting thing.
Well, and I talk to my daughters, and it's not like, and some, you know, sexuality is something more important, but it's not like I'm sharing everything that I talk to my daughters about with Kathy.
That's what I mean, is like, if you're just having a conversation with the girls and, you know, and it happens to get onto more intense topics, it would be, why do you feel like you need to share? You're not keeping anything from him. And if he asked you a question, you would share it. There's no secret. Like, this is kind of the truth in marriage too. If we are doing something and intentionally trying to hide it, it's deception. If right. we are just going through our life and it's just irrelevant, or it's not, don't need help, then it's...
I think the answer, which is the most annoying answer of all time, is it depends. Yeah.
So basically, Kim, if you need support, if your daughters tell you something and you're like, whoa, that's intense, or I need help helping them, then you bring Chuck in.
And I would say to Chuck, do you want to know your daughters?
But of course he does.
I know, but do you want to know this stuff about your daughters? And he might, because it sounds like Chuck doesn't know.
But I would actually address it differently and say, I need help from you, not do you want it? Because do you want to know your daughters is like setting up for defensiveness.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't say that to you. Because I know you want to know your
daughters. Well, how do you ask that question without it
being defensive? I would say, Todd, something, I had a conversation with one of the girls last night and I'm kind of freaking out. I want to talk it through with you.
But what if you don't, what if you aren't struggling with it?
Then it's just a conversation with the girls.
What do you think, Kim?
That makes total sense. But, like, you know, they use the word hookup all the time. Mm-hmm. And it could be, hookup could be anything from having a guy sit in the backseat of the car talking at Sonic to actually having sex.
Correct.
Or just having oral sex or whatever. And it's a big wide range. And they say hookup, hookup, hookup. And he'll look at me with big wide eyes. And he'll be like, okay, so, like, what's the hookup? And I'm like, it depends on the day. I mean, I don't know. I don't need to know either, but I have one daughter that likes to, she doesn't want to scar me with details, but she likes to keep me informed of everybody, mm-hmm. herself, all of her friends, mm-hmm. everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. Legally, what they're doing, illegally, I mean, like, all of it. So mm-hmm. that's just her. I don't just share that all the time because I don't think that it's necessary to share that.
Mm-hmm.
But when she said something one time about someone hooking up, or she was hooking up, and he was like, I don't really want to know what that means. And I was like, okay, then don't ask her, because mm-hmm. she'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then I just was wondering, you know, it's like, because we're so close and we share so much. But, I mean, she did get put on a birth control pill because she has a herniated disc and her periods were making her really heavy, was causing pain. But then she didn't like the way she felt on it, so she went off of it. You know, so he is aware of all the health care, stuff like that. You know, they have their periods and the whole dealio. But just sexual stuff, he's liking to keep his head in the sand a little bit.
A little bit. And you know what? I that's the thing is, I don't think, and again, you may have a different opinion about this because you're more in Chuck's world, but I don't think that's an issue because he's so involved. Like, put it this way, if your daughter, like if she was in a relationship that was emotionally abusive or someone had harmed her, he would be there in a second.
Yes.
She's just talking about her day-to-day experience of like, I hooked up this person on Friday, or I'm thinking I like this person. And if you and Chuck were out to dinner one night and you could kind of fill him in on the basics, I'm not keeping anything from Todd, but I know I've had more intense conversations mm-hmm. with the girls than he has, but there's nothing to relay. It almost feels gossipy to be like, JC, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's our relationship. And I'm kind of like, even though it's same, like sometimes the girls share with me a lot of things where I'm like, you know, you can kind of tell your friends about that one. But I also feel like I can listen without, it's their life and they're just kind of saying it out loud and they don't even need support. They don't even need validation. They're just speaking and you've given them this beautiful space to do that.
Right.
And we don't need to do anything about it. You know, you've allowed them to feel safe in their home, Kim, you know, it's pretty cool.
By the way, I tell Chuck to listen to yesterday's podcast. Cause I didn't say his name, but I talked a little bit about him.
Okay.
He'll know which part I'm talking about.
Okay.
Little sweetheart. I got this kind of bromance with your husband. Because for those of you guys who don't know Kim's husband, his name is Chuck. He went on my retreat that we did. And he's got these tats and he just looks like a biker guy. And he's like, he's the opposite of me with my hair combed and no tattoos. And he's such a big freaking teddy bear, at least from my perspective. And I just want to hug him.
He's just a sweetie.
And I'm going to see him on Friday afternoon and I'm going to give him a long, long hug.
And tell him you love him.
I will tell him I love him because it was a very impactful weekend for both of us. So.
Oh my God. He can't wait for the next one. And I mean, he loved it. He really thought it was very helpful and impactful.
And my God, those men because most of Chuck was one of the newbies. So everybody else kind of knows each other. And, you know, here comes this biker guy from Tennessee. And everybody just fell in love with him immediately.
Yeah,
and at the very end, he shared this song that he wrote and performed. And it was amazing.
Mm.
So anyways, love your husband. All right. We got 5 minutes. What should we talk about?
I don't think does anybody have any like logistical questions about next weekend? I know we're going to see some of you. I know not everybody, but see anyone here going to conference and flying in Thursday. Oh, that's nice. So Millie just said, anyone here going to the conference and flying in on Thursday who would like to share a cab? I fly in around 3:30 on the 27th.
I got the hotel kind of rooms and there's only a few people coming in on Thursday. But anyway, so if anybody suits that, reach out to Millie.
What are you going to do on Thursday night, Millie? Will you take her off mute for a second?
Millie.
Hold on.
Here we go.
Well, I do. I will do my usual. I'm just going to chill in the room. I'm going to be by myself. So
awesome.
I don't know. I'll just watch a movie or something, or just be quiet and write or something.
Awesome. And you won't have a car, but if you want to come over to our house, my Aunt Peg is going to be at our house Thursday night. We're going to be stuffing bags.
Yeah. Swag bags.
Ooh, stuffing bags. I love to stuff bags.
Yes.
I know.
Perfectly, mind you. No.
We get pizza.
And did you hear this week's podcast, Millie?
It was, I don't know if I've done this week
yet.
We talked a little bit about solitude and how I'm Terrified.
Oh, no, I don't think I have.
Kathy loves it. So yet another difference between me and my sweetie pie.
Yes, my girls.
I don't think I have enough solitude.
Yeah, I love it. I was at my aunt's house last weekend by myself. It was great.
Terrifies me.
All right, friends, we're going to go. And thank you for all your questions. And hopefully it's been helpful. And we're going to see a lot of you in a week. Mm-hmm. And then for those of you we're not going to see, we'll have another Zen talk right after the conference, probably, right? Probably the week after.
Yeah, probably the week after.
And we'll have other things coming
up. And if anybody has any friends that would be a good fit for Team Zen, let me know and I'll send them a personal invite or something like that. And I don't know who user is, but user
it's
said-
It's Mimi.
Oh, is that Mimi?
Mm-hmm.
She can't go, but she said good luck.
Thank you, Mimi.
Thanks, Anita.
And thanks for your nice
Thanks,
comment.
Alyssa. Thank you, Dawn. Thanks, Alicia. Thanks, Mary Jo. Thanks, Pogbear. Thanks, Kim. Thanks, Millie. And thanks, Mimi. You guys keep trucking.
Keep trucking.
Adios.